I love the code name Microsoft's come up with, apparently, for their new Surface Buds, which is one of the names that's been tossed around as possibly.
I missed the code name.
You missed the potential code name? Morrison.
Oh, code names. You know, code names are, you used to hear a lot
Riders
more about.
Riders on the Storm.
Okay.
Cue rain sound.
Exactly. Wow. We are.
We're all over the place.
This is the
here.
ADD episode of the GeekWire podcast. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the GeekWire podcast. I'm GeekWire editor Todd Bishop.
And I'm GeekWire co-founder John Cook.
Hey, did you know, John, that the Seattle area has a new unicorn? Were you aware of this?
I was, yes. I spotted it running up the hills of Capitol Hill the other day.
Yeah, we've got a new billion-dollar company, Outreach. And that was one of the things that caught our attention as we were looking at the news over the past week. This is a company that specializes in sales automation, sales and marketing automation.
Yeah, essentially they make sales representatives more efficient and effective in terms of their outreach to clients.
Ah, okay.
Got
all
it?
Right. Yes, exactly. All right, so this is part of a bigger picture story involving IPOs here in Seattle and Silicon Valley, a new investor that has cropped up that is invested in two of Seattle's unicorns. And by the way, when we say unicorns, we're talking about companies that have a valuation of $1 billion or more. It's kind of one of the big thresholds for being a giant startup with the potential to eventually go on and make an IPO. So let's start with Outreach. So this is a company run by Manny Medina, who is a really kind of a very charismatic entrepreneur here in the Seattle region. Somebody who...
Sex Pistols listening, hard charging entrepreneur.
Wait, how do you know that he listens to the Sex Pistols?
Because when he was, I think he was up for Entrepreneur of the Year at the GeekWire Awards, and we should do a plug. The GeekWire Awards are coming up May 2nd. Go to geekwire.com/awards.
Yep.
So he was up for an award, and we did this little gimmick where we rode around in the Wave business van, and I interviewed all of our CEO of the Year candidates, and Manny was up for the award that year. And I got to know them quite a bit, driving around the streets of Seattle, talking about everything that they loved, including the Sex Pistols. Now, we should ask Manny what his favorite Sex Pistols song is.
Exactly, exactly. So Manny started this company, and it's grown to a quite a big company. Its valuation is now $1.1 billion.
And based on the $114 million venture capital round that came in this week, which is not a small amount of money floating around into this idea.
Not at all. And one of the most interesting parts of this story is that there was a name that cropped up as the lead investor in this round, Lone Pine Capital, a Greenwich, Connecticut-based hedge fund manager.
Well, I read the story and I was like,
who?
Who? I haven't heard of these folks. I don't know much about them. I started doing some internet research. Their website has almost no information on it. There's very little out there about them. And so I was very intrigued with who they were.
And we often talk about how some story ideas come straight out of the podcast. We've already actually started looking into this one to figure out who these folks are, because the interesting angle of this
is... Oh, it's Lone Pine Capital.
That's what I said.
Oh, did I say Lone Fir? I can't.
No, okay. You said pine.
All right, Lone Pine.
No, you got the right tree.
I've gotten the right tree. I'm in the conifer, you know,
exactly.
Arena. Yes.
But the interesting thing about this is that they also invested last year in Convoy, which is the on-demand trucking startup, which is another unicorn in the Seattle region. And there's more to Convoy's story that we can talk about. But this was fascinating, and we're trying to figure out, and one of the things we're looking into and have a reporter digging into is, why is this company, this hedge fund, suddenly kind of emerging from nowhere to invest in these two Seattle startups? It's going to be an interesting one to find out. Do you have any hunches, John?
Well, you have seen alternative asset classes coming into the venture capital arena in a much bigger way. So things like hedge funds, corporate investors, you know, it's not just the traditional venture capital firms on Sand Hill Road in Silicon Valley, sovereign wealth funds. So there is a whole new breed of capital, which is actually what has sparked the whole unicorn phenomena, really, is that there's this massive amount of capital out there from really large pools of funding sources that wasn't historically available, and that money is getting put to work into companies like Uber and Lyft and Convoy and Outreach so that they can attain $1 billion valuation prior to them going public.
I would imagine, not to get too wonky, but this must trace its roots to interest rates, right? And the fact that this venture investing by these alternative types of capital suddenly starts to become more attractive when investments in more traditional types of things might not be getting the kinds of returns that they would want. So they're just trying to take on more risk with the potential of getting more reward.
I actually don't know the strategy behind it. I would say that there, you know, the venture capital game has been high risk and high reward. And if you can hit an Uber style investment, you can do really well.
It's interesting. Speaking of Uber, we've just over the past couple weeks seen Lyft go public and Uber file its S-1 registration statement, which is basically their IPO papers. It was funny. I was looking at the two of them. If you look at their income statements, Uber is super, super complicated. If you look at their profit and loss statement, they've got divestitures and unrealized gains on investments, because essentially Dara Khosrowshahi has been cleaning up Travis Kalanick's mess. And I can only imagine what it's like to be in the accounting department at Uber. They have much more revenue than Lyft, but they have a much more complicated profit and loss statement. Anyway, that was sort of a side thing. But the other interesting thing about Uber's S-1 is they named Convoy, one of these other Seattle area unicorns, as one of their competitors, like explicitly.
For Uber Freight. Yeah, I was surprised to hear that, because Convoy is still a smaller company, startup. So the fact that they are on their radar I'm certainly sure they're tracking them, but to have them listed as a competitor really shows their serious about competing with them.
Right. It shows that Convoy is a serious company. It's seriously regarded. But at the same time, if you look at Convoy's investors, you've got Reid Hoffman, Jeff Bezos, you know, the investment arms of a bunch of interesting people. Is Bill Gates involved? I'm trying to remember that.
Convoy? I can't remember.
I'll look that up while we're talking here. But yeah, I know it's a who's who. It's basically who's who. Yeah, they have
Bill Gates as well. Wow.
He was involved. Yeah, he's been in one of the rounds. So clearly Convoy is on the radar of Uber as it relates to Uber Freight.
Well, the other thing that was interesting in the S-1 for Uber, I did a search for Seattle. And Seattle actually appears. Now, Uber does have a growing engineering presence, so that was one of the reasons why I thought they might appear. But do you know why Seattle appears?
Well, I just and did
the
control
did you find
F.
it?
I'm sorry.
Did you find out? I was going to quiz you.
I'm too
don't,
quick.
Don't read it. Don't read it.
I just saw something that said jurisdictions, so
right.
I assume that it's related to the regulations that Seattle tried to pass on ride sharing.
No, that was my original thought.
Stop,
I thought it was going to be that, but that's not what it was.
I actually know what it is.
You figured it out.
It's Seattle's decision not to allow scooters, which Uber is into.
No. I'm stumping you again. I'm glad you haven't read. Here it is. Jurisdictions such as Seattle have in the past considered or may consider regulations that would implement minimum wage requirements.
Oh, you're
kidding. Yes, or permit drivers to negotiate for minimum wages while providing services on our platform.
Oh, you know who would have gotten that is Monica. She would have known. She would have known that was in the S-1. Interesting. Wow. Okay. So, yeah, that is such a huge issue for Uber and in terms of the independent contractor issue. You know, when I took – this is complete – we're all so all over the place here. But when I took a Lyft to the airport, I was surprised. I didn't know – did you know that some Lyft drivers and I guess some Uber drivers, they're driving company vehicles? Like the company owns them and they essentially use them? I had not heard about this.
I had heard of this. There was some sort of leasing program.
Yeah. Exactly. So anyway, at any rate, the big picture here, it's fascinating that you're seeing this emergence of the next wave of companies in a couple different areas. First, you've had this series of Silicon Valley companies essentially reach the point where they're going public. Pinterest, Uber, Lyft.
Zoom.
Exactly. And so you're seeing the next wave of public companies come out of the tech industry. And that was one of the big predictions for 2019, and we're actually seeing it happen. So number one, John, you always have a good sense for this. What does this say about the economy more broadly, that you have these companies essentially reaching the point where they become public, their original investors are able to cash out if they want? What does that signify?
Well, I think there's some pent-up demand for it. It's been a pretty bleak IPO market for a few years. And so some of these companies – and at some point, these companies that have raised this massive amount of money, they need to pay back their investors. And there are really only a couple ways for companies like this to pay back their investors. You get acquired, and if you're of Uber size, there aren't really many acquirers out there for an Uber, or you go public. And so really, it's a way to raise additional funding, but also to cash out some of those original investors, which they want to get their payback. And sometimes they have to wait 5, 10, 15, 20 years for that. And it has taken longer for companies to get to an IPO than it has in the past. So, yeah, it's interesting to watch. A lot of these companies are still losing a lot of money, though. I mean, Uber, what was it, $4 billion loss in one calendar year. So the jury is still out as these companies go through massive expansion, whether they can actually turn a profit on their business.
And that is where you have to look at the operating loss on these companies, because Uber's operating loss in 2018 was about $3 billion. But then if you actually go to the bottom line, the actual net income, it was almost $1 billion, because they're selling off operations in, I think, Russia, and doing the investment in China that they had to change. So that's where, as I was mentioning earlier, Uber's financials are a mess.
So this $987 million net income that they're showing for 2018 is largely because they sold off their – is that what you're saying?
Exactly.
Sold off their Chinese stake?
It was that, and it was changing their investment in China with Didi. Is that how you say that one? And then also selling their operations in Russia. Clearly here, Uber is going to be a fascinating IPO to watch. And in many ways, it's going to be a litmus test for Dara Khosrowshahi, the former Expedia CEO who came in, tried to clean that thing up. Are investors going to buy that turnaround story? And do they believe Uber has really changed? So that's going to be a really interesting one as they go public.
In many ways, I know Uber gets a lot of crap for their business tactics and how they operate, but really it is changing. I mean, if I look at my own personal lifestyle and on the consumer end, it really has changed my thought process on how I look at transportation. You know, we've moved to a one-car family. I use Uber and Lyft now, especially when I need to get downtown. Certainly that doesn't equate to the convoy situation. I'm not driving an 18-wheeler around Interstate 90 or anything. But yeah, it was interesting. I don't know. It was just interesting to see Convoy in the mix on this, that they're a real player.
And it's essentially the maturation of the sharing economy is what you're talking about there, because that is essentially the common thread between you catching a ride with somebody who is ostensibly sharing their car with you when, in fact, actually they're working a job. But regardless, then these freight companies with capacity using platforms like Convoy to essentially find people to fill it with things to ship. So lots of interesting stuff happening there. And it's also interesting to see the competition between a Seattle company and a Bay Area company as well. We've seen more of that recently, specifically related to Amazon, Microsoft, and Apple.
Interesting.
And we're going to talk about that coming up next. You're listening to GeekWire.
Technology moves fast. I need to move faster. WGU's competency-based education puts me in control of how fast I move through my IT degree program. I can accelerate my program by applying what I already know to my courses and focusing on the things I need to learn. Earn a respected accredited degree that propels your career in the IT field. Learn more at wgu.edu/IT certs included.
Welcome back to GeekWire. It's Todd Bishop.
And John Cook.
All right, John. So we've been talking a lot recently, more than we probably should, about AirPods, because you and I are both kind of...
AirPods junkies.
we're avid users.
In fact, I have beef to pick with you about my AirPods.
A beef to pick? It's called a bone to pick.
A bone to pick. I got a beef with you.
Yes,
how about
exactly.
that? I got a beef with you.
Oh, no. What?
I came over to... because my AirPods finally ran out of...
I did you a
charging
favor.
Capacity,
I did you a
and
favor.
And I tried to charge on your charging station over there, and it did not charge my AirPods.
Hey, man, to each his own. You got to figure that out.
Got to figure it out. Okay. Well, anyway.
I love them. I think that they are kind of the stealth product in the tech world that a lot of people kind of dismiss and then realize once they start using them how amazing they are. And I think that the latest news from Amazon and Microsoft only reinforces that belief. Both companies are reportedly working on competitors for the AirPods. I find this fascinating in so many ways. First off, this is essentially the next platform for digital assistants. So one thing that Amazon clearly will do is use whatever kind of wireless earbuds they're going to roll out as an Alexa device. I mean, obviously, you're going to just tap your ear and say, Alexa. And so clearly, there's that. But to me, the real power of these kinds of wireless technologies that are, frankly, almost embedded in your body is that it's the next step toward that human-machine interface. And I've said this before, but I am ready for the SD card in, you know, the back of my head. I am ready to meld with the machine, mind and machine. Sign me up if it's going to make me better and there aren't any negative repercussions.
Yeah, right.
I'm such an optimist.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I just think it's a fascinating trend. And I think it's one of those products. It's almost like when Amazon initially announced the Echo, everybody kind of went, yeah, it's not that different. It's not that much better, or it's just kind of weird. And I think over time, it's become obvious that this is clearly something where there's, as they would say in the startup world, product market fit.
So, indeed.
So here's my question for you. If you could improve your AirPods, do some market research here for Amazon and Microsoft, how would you improve them? How can Amazon and Microsoft make a better AirPod than Apple?
Well, I know for you, you want a color change.
Yeah,
number
I mean,
one.
That's not exactly innovation.
That's not really going to mix it up. I agree. I like the idea of becoming a cyborg and having this more embedded into my...
We're screwed.
Yeah. And
if the two of us...
Because they are still a little bit... They're not as goofy as Google Glass, you got to admit. But they're a little bit goofy in terms of how they hang in the ear. So something that's melds a little bit better with... You know, in fact... And this is a societal problem that... I can't remember where I saw it, but there are service workers, so waiters... barbers, you know, people that are now in the service economy who are encountering people that are wearing their AirPods.
And they don't know whether they're listening to
music. And they don't know whether they're listening to music or not. And so it's creating this weird dynamic. And I have experienced this before. Like I'll take out one because then that stops the listening and that shows that I'm listening to you. But it is a little weird, and you can see this period where people are just locked into their own worlds and not interacting with anybody anymore. So there is a negative to this.
And the reason that's happening is because it's much more natural to just leave your AirPods in than it is to leave in regular earbuds with a wire, because they're just there, and it's actually, sometimes I forget that they're in there. And it's like, oh, wait, do I have those in? No. Oh, yeah. But no, so there was a BuzzFeed news story. People wearing AirPods are making things awkward for everyone else. That's probably what you saw.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was similar to the Google Glass situation.
Yeah, I guess. Although that was just completely awkward. You know, I don't know. But
some people were true believers.
True. But I think the issue there was you didn't know if they were recording or not, right? Because maybe that is one way that Amazon and Microsoft could one-up Apple is... maybe a little light on there that indicates whether there's active sound going through them. Maybe that could be one way to do it.
Or I thought you were going to say add video capabilities to them. So you can record everything around you.
And then
store it to Azure or AWS, and then your entire life is recorded.
There you go.
Yep.
Justin TV.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yes.
The thing that turned into Twitch.
Yes.
Right? Oh, that's interesting. Because, you know, Twitch is owned by Amazon. And Amazon really hasn't yet embedded Twitch into the rest of its product line. Twitch so far is one of those kind of standalone acquisitions by Amazon, as opposed to like Ring, where it's still standalone, but it's also kind of incorporated into their
smart
home. But
wasn't there a story where they were going to start using Twitch or the platform to do more like
QVC
style shopping?
Yeah, and they've dabbled in that.
Yeah, I haven't tracked that too closely.
No, they've dabbled in it, but they haven't gone big on it yet. They've tried a few different things like that. At any rate, you could see, is there some sort of wearable approach that would incorporate Amazon, Alexa, and Twitch? And then the shoes from Zappos, like this is...
Yeah, it's a connected world, baby.
At any rate, I thought this was all fascinating, but it is interesting where... It's a bit of a kind of a follow the leader kind of situation here, where Apple has clearly defined the market and all of these other products are going to be stacked up against it. And, you know, one challenge that Microsoft has in all of this is they don't have their own smartphone platform, although neither does Amazon, but Amazon has the advantage of Alexa and Echo. And, you know, that is really one amazing place where Amazon has rebounded. You know, the Fire Phone flopped, but they were able to take Echo to essentially give themselves a real consumer play for their voice assistant. Microsoft, the Harman Kardon speaker that they came out with, Cortana, then again.
Well, they got the Xbox,
and they've got
could be interesting.
Hundreds of millions of devices running Windows. So, I mean, they do have that advantage, although I think you need a mobile play to make these things work.
Yeah, that makes more sense. I mean, people, if you look at your own usage of it, it's when you're on the go, is when you're largely using these devices. So,
and the other big thing is, you know, Apple has the advantage of tight integration with the iPhone and the AirPods, and neither Microsoft nor Amazon will have that advantage. That neither has any kind of real presence on smartphones to speak of.
I love
in terms of operating systems.
I love the code name Microsoft's come up with apparently for their new Surface Buds, which is one of the names that's been tossed around as possibly.
I missed the code name.
You missed the potential code name? Morrison.
Oh, code names. You know, code names are, you used to hear a lot more about.
Riders on the Storm.
Okay.
Cue rain sound.
Exactly. Wow. We're
all over the place.
This is the ADD episode of the GeekWire podcast.
All right. Anything more on Surface Buds, AirPods, or Amazon's entry?
No, I think that's all
that's
I got. Well, actually, the one other last twist is Facebook is developing its own virtual assistant, and the report, at least, is that they're doing that out of their Seattle office, which is interesting because that means that they're able to poach Amazon engineers, and that is one of the fascinating wrinkles from all of these Silicon Valley companies establishing engineering centers here, is that essentially, where Seattle has a strength, Amazon.
Why do they all feel they have to jump into each other's markets? Is it just because they think that that's the next big thing that's going to take off? Like, as you said, you think, AirPods are potentially the Trojan horse to the next era of computing, and now they all have to pile on there? Like, can't somebody just go and do something unique and super interesting on their own without...
no competition?
Yes, create a new market. Or I guess Apple did that to some degree, but...
Well, I'm sure...
That's where true innovation lies.
That's always been
I guess maybe that's what Microsoft's doing with quantum computing, right? Or
right, they're trying to push the envelope there. And, you know, I think to some extent these companies look at it and say pragmatically, hey, if Apple gets out too far ahead in this area, it'd be just like Microsoft trying to catch up in smartphones. It was just too late. So let's try something now. Because, you know, if you look at Facebook and some of, like, their in-home
device. So you
got
to put a bet on almost all of this stuff to some degree to see how much market traction there is.
I think that's the approach, yeah. That Facebook looks at it and says, hey, if we don't have our own voice assistant that people associate with our platform, we're going to be seen as behind, or potentially we are going to be behind because people won't be as engaged with Facebook as they could. I don't know. And you got the whole Oculus thing tied into this with Facebook and assistants. And so at any rate, there's lots of interesting ways that Facebook could use that assistant. And I think they just feel like they have to be there. All right. Coming up next, because this episode hasn't been random enough. It's the Random Channel. You're listening to GeekWire, and we'll be right back. Hey, welcome back to the Random Channel. It's that moment of the week where we talk about all the random items we were buzzing about behind the scenes this week. John, I got one for you.
Hit me.
Melinda Gates' new book is coming out.
Read it.
Yeah. Well, I have.
You have an advanced copy, right?
I do have an advanced copy. It's called Moment of Lift, and it's really a fascinating book. I won't get into all the details. We'll have coverage on GeekWire when it comes out, and we actually will have Melinda on an upcoming episode of the GeekWire podcast.
Exciting.
In fact. But she did an interview with the New York Times Magazine, and they asked her at one point during this interview, what's something about the tech world right now that drives you crazy?
I did read this.
Yeah. Okay. So you know what she's going to say?
I think so. Yes. Yeah. There may have been multiple things, but I think I know what she said.
Yeah. So she said she would love to see more tech innovation on behalf of the world. Right now, it's let's create the next thing that tracks my dog. That's fun and nice, but come on, there are people dying.
I totally agree with this sentiment, and it kind of builds off my comments from the last segment of, like, why does everyone have to go create the next earbuds to put in your ears.
Yep.
Like, go do something innovative and creative and unique that's going to solve an entirely new problem.
That is my fundamental issue right now with the discussion of homelessness in Seattle. Not the broader issue, but the fact that the tech industry here has an opportunity, I think, to step up and use Seattle as kind of an innovation petri dish for all sorts of new potential ideas. Maybe they could do it through their philanthropic arms, but I think it's key for these tech companies to carve out some of their time to create innovations, use these kinds of approaches that they're using now to develop products, not pivot their entire business models, but come up with actual solutions here that could be rolled out in other places, kind of the Peoria of social issues. You've got the Gates Foundation here, PATH, Fred Hutch. You got Microsoft, Amazon. I mean, why aren't these companies and organizations getting together and carving out some time to solve these problems using Seattle as the test bed? I don't know. Maybe we can talk to Melinda about that when she's in.
Good question.
Yeah. Anyway, the book is great. Highly recommended. And as I said, we'll have a review on GeekWire and an interview coming up with Melinda. So what's your item, John?
I've got a bunch. Looking through our random channel in Slack here, I really enjoyed Kurt Schlosser's post, GeekWire reporter, talking about a guy who is reading the entire Mueller report out loud in streaming. As of this recording, he was on page 44. was pretty interesting.
I saw this earlier today, and I slacked Taylor Soper, our managing editor, and said, well, how can we learn from this? Is there something we could do? Because that was the fundamental problem when it first was released. It's like, people are jumping on the radio saying, okay, I just read page XX and I'm, now I learned this. And the host says, okay, now go back and read some more. It's like, you could just sit down and read it. This is brilliant. This is somebody from Vox that did this?
I don't know who the person was. Yeah. So
innovative.
Very innovative.
And innovative in its simplicity. I appreciate that about it. We'll see where he is by the time people actually hear this.
And Todd, are you a Game of Thrones watcher?
I am.
You are.
I've watched.
I didn't know that.
Well, a little bit of a caveat.
Okay.
No spoilers. Spoiler-free zone here. I have watched.
You're not going to get a spoiler from me. I've never watched it.
You've never watched one season?
I tried to watch like half an episode. Didn't hook me.
So I have watched up to this season. I have not watched any episodes from this new season yet, the last season here. Did you see James Corden, what he did to one of his staffers?
No.
Who was like you and had never watched it.
Oh, really? That poor soul.
He made him go in. I think it was maybe a Friday morning or a Friday or Thursday morning, whatever it was. He made him watch every single episode back to back.
Over the
weekend, yes. And like, it's a pretty funny segment.
Survive this massacre of media?
He survived. I don't know that his sanity survived.
Okay.
It was pretty hilarious. And there's some key twists along the way where he was, the reactions were great. I'll link to that video in the show notes too.
Well, there's a newsletter I really like called Reliable Sources with Brian Stelter, CNN. And he came up with a term, or I don't know if he came up with it himself or he spotted this somewhere, never throners, this group of people that have never watched Game of Thrones and are isolated from the rest of society who's tuned into the show. And I guess I fall into that camp. So that kind of resonated with me that I'm a never throner.
Yeah, I think there's a certain element of that. I've told Monica Nicholsberg on our team, who is
She's very passionate about the show.
She had a Game of Thrones dress that she wore. Do you remember this? It was like the map of the world. Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. And I've told her, don't talk to me about this. I don't want to hear it. She had, I'm probably giving away too much here, but she had a gotluck, as she called it, for Game of Thrones potluck for the...
Oh, jeez. Okay.
We'll have to get Monica. She talked about this a little bit on our last episode, but yeah, she's a... She's a big fan. I had a great experience at the Mariners game this past week. Mariners.
T-Mobile Park. How is T-Mobile Park?
You know what? On our past podcast.
Has it changed?
I complained about the color scheme. Just having seen the images, I just thought it was a little gaudy.
What did you expect from the magenta loving John Ledger?
Right, exactly. But to me, actually seeing it in person, I liked it. I think it worked. the magenta and the green of Safeco. I think it popped. Really popped. And it didn't seem as gaudy on the inside for some reason. I don't know what it was. It just seemed to work. At any rate, I bring it up because I heard one of the best renditions of the national anthem ever. Do you want to guess who sang it? Did I tell you this?
You told me.
Oh, I did. All right. We got to stop talking before the show. Wands from, he was essentially the thrift shop guy who said the bad word in the Macklemore song. But turns out I'd never heard him actually sing. And you know, sometimes those national anthems, it's pretty painful. And he was just on it. The only bummer was it was a Monday night game and it was cold. And I think there might have been 5,000 people in the stands. And I can't find a YouTube video of it, unfortunately. But gosh, Wands, he should be singing it more. And you know, he worked at Tableau for a while.
Yes, I don't
think he's there anymore. But at any rate, that was another random item on my mind.
Yeah, all right. I've gone random out.
We're completely randomized.
Yeah.
Hey, before we end, a quick reminder, the GeekWire Awards are coming up May 2nd in Seattle. You can still get your tickets, although this event sells out.
Yeah, get them quick.
Yeah, geekwire.com/awards. As of right now, voting is still on.
No, voting will have closed by the time you hear this.
Okay, all right.
Likely.
As of the time of this recording, it's going on.
Correct, but it will be over by the time people are listening
to it. Okay, but you can still go. And it's
a great attend, and you should.
MoPop. And also coming up in early June,
the GeekWire Cloud Summit.
And you can check that out at geekwire.com/cloud-summit. I'll be interviewing Kevin Scott, the CTO of Microsoft, to kick things off. He's a fascinating guy. I've been getting to know him a little bit more over the past year. And other speakers include?
The co-founder of Slack, Cal Henderson. I'm very interested to see his talk, given the fact that we are pretty heavy-duty Slack users. We will have our CIO panel back, a CEO panel, a venture capital panel, and also talking and going pretty deep in three tracks on artificial intelligence, DevOps, and cloud migration. So it's for the big tech nerds out there in our audience.
That's right. It's our big technical conference of the year. That's the GeekWire Cloud Summit coming up on June
5th.
And you can find out more at geekwire.com/cloud-summit. Hey, thanks for listening, everybody. Talk to you next time.